It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Week number 7 now in the books. Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here with the solo recap edition, breaking down everything that happened in week number 7. It was, I feel like we've had a lot of sloppy football, and going into the week, looking at the spreads, the totals and everything, and the matchups, I expected some blowouts this week, but I believe there were some, I don't know if it was like Scott Hansen or a bunch of other, you know, analysts talking about like this was one of the like worst weeks in terms of like blowouts and games that weren't close, right? You look at across the board. I mean, the Jets get blown out because it's Sunday, and that's what happens with the Jets on Sundays and Thursdays and Mondays and occasional Tuesdays and Saturdays, right? But the Bears get destroyed by Tampa Bay. Arizona, slow start, but they end up winning comfortably by 26. The Rams game was the only one that we expected to blow out. That didn't happen. But then, I mean, the Bengals blow out the Ravens. The Chiefs get blown out by Tennessee. Like, there really weren't many competitive, fun games that went down to the wire. I mean, the Giants destroyed Carolina. It was bad. But, you know, that's applicable for fantasy. It obviously impacts things, but we're talking about the fantasy performances here from week number 7 and how we can apply it going forward. That's what we do here on Fade the Chalk. So, before we get started, I want everybody to make sure they are going to FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bets to check out all the content, videos, articles, tools, projections. I mean, this stuff is, I could sit here for an hour and just talk about everything there, but we have so many games to break down. But I mean, basketball season started last week. It's been really fun. Subs and everything have been taking down a lot in NBA. They've had some good starts to the season, so that's always great to see. And of course, football is still there. College football, World Series. I mean, baseball's still there. We got the World Series between the Braves and the Houston Astros, so that'll be fun. And it's just a great time for sports, so make sure you're getting over there at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bets to be a part of everything. But let's get to these games. We'll start with the Cincinnati Bengals. How about those Cincinnati Bengals? They look pretty for real. I don't know if they're a contender, really, so to speak, but they're a good football team right now. 5-2, they win handedly. I mean, a lot of people saying this is like the biggest game for the Bengals in years. They destroy the Baltimore Ravens 41-17. And it's interesting going into the week. You know, I was talking about how this Bengals offense for fantasy, it wasn't as exciting as we thought it would be because they were last in average seconds per play. They were bottom 5 in no huddle percentage. They were bottom 10 in passing play percentage. But in this game, they go with the pass, and when you have Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, that's probably a good idea more often than not, as Joe Burrow goes for 416 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 go to CJ Uzama on, did you know it was National Tight End Day yesterday? I don't know if anybody told you, but CJ Uzama, I mean, I'm not going, so CJ Uzama has 3 catches for 91 yards and 2 touchdowns on 3 targets, and he's obviously had some huge games this year. I would still be like really, really hesitant to really put a ton of stock into this, right? I mean, the routes in this game were fine. He ran 26 pass routes. Right now, it's 14th among all tight ends for the week. So it's not bad. It's good enough. But it was 2 broken plays where, and again, that's the Ravens have been awful against tight ends. They like, there was some talk about the Ravens being terrible against tight ends. Maybe it's because they face Kelsey and Waller and Hockenson, and they literally face like the best tight ends in the NFL. But they just are bad against the position. CJ Uzama's 2 touchdowns, he was wide open and had to make one guy miss, and he did. So I think this game was more just absolute lapses in Baltimore's secondary and their pass defense than anything really impressive about Uzama's usage or anything. And like I mentioned, this Bengals team is still playing at the slowest pace in the NFL, or right up there, or down there, however you want to phrase it. And yeah, they threw the ball 38 times in this game, but in other games, like, they've been perfectly content giving Joe Mixon, you know, 25 touches, and the passing game was how they got after Baltimore this game. So, like, again, there's only, it's not a, I think we only have two teams on bye. Andrews is one of them. The Ravens are on bye next week, so you will have to replace an elite tight end. The other team on bye is the Raiders, so it's actually Andrews and Waller. So I guess in that aspect, sure, if you want to pick up CJ Uzomah and potentially stream him, the routes are fine, but it's hard for him to get more than like four or five targets, or even maybe even get that when Higgins is there. Jamar Chase is a superstar. We'll talk about him next. And T. Higgins had a massive target share in this game. So, but Jamar Chase, I mean, absolute superstar in every single way. 8 catches for 201 yards and a touchdown on 10 targets. It was an 82-yard touchdown where he broke multiple tackles and then took off. He was really dominating an elite cornerback in Marlon Humphrey in this game. And, I mean, Jamar Chase, he's had a 30-plus yard reception in every game this season. As it stands right now, 32% of his targets have come 20-plus yards down the field. It's one of the highest rates in the NFL. He currently leads the NFL in deep receptions with 9, deep yards with 375, and deep touchdowns with 4. 56.3% of his receptions have come at least 20 yards or more down the field, highest rate or one of the highest rates in the NFL. And through 7 games, the guy's got 754 receiving yards. It's the most by a player in his first 7 games in the history of the league. So the connection with Joe Burrow is obviously there. It was there in college. We expected to be there in the NFL. But yeah, he's clearly a wide receiver one right now. I don't know how you can look at it any other way. T. Higgins kind of being used like T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd are getting no downfield work because it's all going to Jamar Chase, right? Higgins 7 for 62 on 15 targets. He had 11 targets in the first half. Tyler Boyd 4 for 39 on 7 targets. Like Tyler Boyd is averaging less than 40 receiving yards per game in the games where Higgins and Chase have been active. He's like 4 or 5 targets per game. He's like 3.5 to 4 receptions per game. Tyler Boyd is someone you should not be starting right now if you can help it, because like I mentioned, they're not playing fast. They're not throwing the ball as much as we thought they would. And Jamar Chase and T. Higgins are just so clearly the 1 and 2 in this offense. So in a 10-team league, Tyler Boyd's probably droppable. In a 12-team league, I'd still be hesitant to drop Tyler Boyd, but there is no upside as long as Higgins and Jamar Chase are active. For the backfield, Samaje Perine has 11 carries in this game. I'm assuming the majority of them came in the last 2 drives and the game's out of reach, but Mixon only had 12 carries, wasn't targeted in the passing game. I mean, Joe Mixon, most games I feel like is going to get the volume, but like we've seen now the passing game start to take steps back since week 1. You know, his routes have come down. Chris Evans is playing on third down. Samaje Perine's even playing on some third downs. So it's definitely taking away from the overall upside of Joe Mixon. Like, rest of the season, you definitely prefer guys like Jonathan Taylor, who were in that range a couple weeks ago, but now Taylor's obviously clearly ahead of him. You definitely prefer somebody. You prefer the whoever is the starting running back for the Browns. It's like assuming Nick Chubb's back, I prefer Nick Chubb. I would still rather have Mixon than Antonio Gibson. But I would rather have Swift. I'd rather have Henderson. So Mixon's not in that top 7 range for me. He wasn't at all, but like a lot of people probably had him in there after the first couple weeks because of the volume, but you're starting him every week, but he's not a top 7 or 8 fantasy running back like he might have been. For Baltimore, I mean, Lamar Jackson, a lot of pressure in this game, 5 sacks. The Bengals defense, give them credit. They're playing really well this year, especially against the run. Jackson, 257 yards and a touchdown, adds 88 rushing yards. He didn't play bad in this game. It's just there was a lot of pressure. And then it's been weird with Lamar Jackson. He's been getting kind of unlucky with touchdowns, right? They get in close and Devonta Freeman converts from a yard out, and that takes away from a Lamar Jackson touchdown. Freeman got the start at running back, but with Latavius Murray out, but Le'Veon Bell leads the team with 5 carries, or leads the running backs with 5 carries. Freeman does get there in the passing game, mostly in garbage time, 3 for 25. You shouldn't feel comfortable starting any running back from the Baltimore Ravens, though, regardless of Latavius Murray's status. In the passing game, Hollywood Brown, 14 targets, 5 catches, 80 yards, and touchdown. He continues to have a breakout season. A lot of those targets came like just kind of like Hail Mary attempts late in the game, but still, he's obviously heavily involved before the game got out of hand. Rashad Bateman, 6 targets, 3 catches for 80 yards. In his debut last week, ran a route on around 70% of the dropbacks, played around 60% of the snaps. In this game, I believe those numbers were very similar. So Sammy Watkins could be back after their bye week. Didn't practice the last 2 weeks, but Bateman needs to be added in every league, and at worst needs to be a high upside wide receiver 3 potential bench stash. Mark Andrews, 3 for 48, he's still a top 3, maybe even tight end. And the Ravens go on a bye in week number 8. Moving on to the Patriots. I mean, 54 points for the New England Patriots. They roll over the New York Jets, 54-13. Really not much from this game. I mean, Brandon Bolden, Ramondre Stevenson was a healthy scratch. I wonder how much that had to do with his, you know, inconsistencies in blitz pickup against Dallas the week before, but he doesn't play in this game. Damien Harris, 14 carries, 106 yards, and a pair of touchdowns. The Jets cannot stop running backs. They give up five running back touchdowns in this game. Damien Harris, J.J. Taylor, and Brandon Bolden were all top 15 running backs on the week. So I guess that'll happen when your team wins 54-13. I'm not going crazy about Taylor or Brandon Bolden. I still expect Ramondre Stevenson to be active more often than not down the stretch. But, great game from Harris. Great game script. The Jets giving up multiple running back touchdowns in so many games this season. And then Mac Jones continues to play well. 307 yards and a pair of touchdowns. One goes to Bolden out of the backfield. The other goes to Hunter Henry, who now has a touchdown in 4 straight games. The one thing I will say is, though, right away in this game, they were making an effort to get Jonnu Smith more involved. He had 5 targets in this game. Like 3 or 4 of them came in the first 2 drives. They even gave him a carry. He did leave this game with an injury. I don't believe he returned. So this is something to monitor because, like, Jonnu Smith's routes this year have been very, very, very underwhelming. They gave him all this money, and he just hasn't been running many routes, right? And Henry now has now scored a touchdown in 4 consecutive games. You look at the routes for the season, it's not like Hunter Henry's running an immense number of routes either, though. Maybe not. He's 9th in the NFL in routes run among tight ends, whereas Jonnu Smith, even before the injury, he was like 40th among tight ends in routes run. Right now, he's 43rd. So if Jonnu's out, you feel a little bit better about Henry each week, but like the volume's still not incredible for Hunter Henry. He's in that like tight end, 12 to 15 range. But I mean, he's getting involved in the end zone, and if you score a touchdown at tight end, you're going to be a top 10 tight end on the week more often than not. And Henry has now scored in 4 straight games. For the Jets, Zach Wilson suffers an injury in this game. I believe he's going to miss some time. It got tweeted out earlier this morning what the exact injury was for Zach Wilson, but he left this game, didn't return. I mean, just the Jets are, I mean, you shouldn't feel comfortable starting anybody on the Jets. Michael Carter is a little bit interesting, and Schefter reported this morning that Zach Wilson suffered a strained PCL and will miss 2 to 4 weeks. So in his absence, it was Mike White who was under center for the Jets, and I will just say, start the Bengals defense next week. But Michael Carter, 11 carries to Ty Johnson's 5, adds a ton of receptions to the passing game in garbage time, 8 catches for 67 yards on 9 targets. I guess Michael Carter and maybe Corey Davis in deeper leagues are still viable. You like the usage from Michael Carter. Tevin Coleman was a healthy scratch again. So it looks like Carter's trending upward, but again, this offense is just so, so bad. Speaking of bad offenses, the Carolina Panthers score 3 points against the Giants. They lose 25-3. Sam Darnold has been absolutely dreadful. He just isn't throwing for yardage. He's not completing passes. He's bad under pressure. DJ Moore, 6 for 73 on 10 targets. You're relieved he got there, but like even DJ Moore's bad games. I mean, this guy's been 70 plus yards in like so many. I'm gonna try to find the exact number real quick on the fly. But like, yes, you don't feel as good about DJ Moore as you did when Sam Darnold was playing well, but like he's still getting double digit targets like every single week. You look at his game log, he's reached double digit targets in all but 2 games this season. He's been 70 yards or more in all but 1 game this season. And you date back to you look at last season's numbers, he's been 70 plus yards in, let's count it live. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 of his last like 20 something games. So he's been great. There's still going to be some ceiling games and their schedule opens up. They got Atlanta next week. So I'm not concerned about DJ Moore. We did see PJ Walker come in for Darnold in this game. After the game, Matt Rhule came out and said that Sam Darnold is their quarterback. He's going to start going forward. And the offense has been bad. I mean, Chuba Hubbard, I love Chuba Hubbard in this game. The usage was good until the game got out of hand. He had 16 touches, 4 receptions, 12 carries. But the offense was bad. They got in close and a couple penalties bumped them back outside the red zone. So you couldn't really get any scoring opportunities for Chuba Hubbard. McCaffrey will be back in early November, and all of Sam Darnold's interceptions this year have come with McCaffrey out of the lineup. I mean, it's just, with Darnold being so bad under pressure, having McCaffrey out of the backfield is so important for him. So, yeah, I mean, Robbie Anderson's obviously droppable. He's been droppable. He's getting the targets, but he's just not catching any of them. It's insane. Like, again, 9 targets in this game, catches 3 for 14 yards. I mean, it's just, it's insane how inefficient this offense is right now. For the Giants, Daniel Jones, 203 yards and a touchdown. 1 catch for 16 yards. I'll tell you, it was an impressive catch. I don't know why Jason Garrett's dialing that up to get his quarterback potentially hit when you're missing like 7 players in your offense in the first place. But Devontae Booker's usage continues to be strong. Elijah Penny had 9 carries in this game, but it was you know, the game was out of hand. Booker still has, you know, 16 touches. He'll be in that RB15 to like 18 range until Saquon Barkley's back. I believe a report came out on Sunday morning that he probably won't be back for their game against the Chiefs. And then the pass catchers. Sterling Shepard tested his hamstring in warmups, wasn't good to go, sat out. So they were without Galladay, they were without Tony, they were without Shepard, they were without Barkley. Slayton has 9 targets, 5 for 63. He would be a streamer option again if these guys can't get back in the lineup on, I believe it's Monday night next week against the Chiefs. And then, I mean, Evan Engram, if you had to start him, he's been bad even with all these guys injured, but 6 for 44 and 8 targets he'll take. And if you had to stream Dante Pettis like I did in a deep dynasty league, he scored. And he had 5 catches on 5 targets, so you'll take that. But, again, things can change so quickly with this offense. If Galladay and Tony and Shepard are back, you're not starting Engram. You're probably not starting Slayton. You're not starting Pettis. Really, it would just be Booker than whoever's active for the Giants that you'd feel comfortable starting. I mean, even if Galladay's active with Shepard and Tony, I probably wouldn't even start Galladay. Because Tony clearly is going to be a huge part of this offense, and Shepard's always been a huge part of the offense when Daniel Jones is healthy. He's had double-digit targets in all of his healthy games this year, and he's averaging nearly 9 targets per game alongside Daniel Jones since entering the NFL. Again, another blowout. These games are pretty quick. Tennessee rolls over the Chiefs 27-3. Tannehill, 270 yards and a touchdown. Derrick Henry, I mean, it's crazy. We had those takes of who would you rather have, Derrick Henry or Patrick Mahomes? And of course, Derrick Henry has more passing touchdowns in this game than Patrick Mahomes. Henry has 29 carries, adds what, 2 receptions. So 30, he's had 30 plus touches in like pretty much all of his games. He adds a passing touchdown. I mean, just, even when Derrick Henry doesn't have 100 yards and a rushing touchdown, he makes up for it by throwing for a touchdown. He's the king. He's the cheat code. Another really nice game from A.J. Brown. Easily his best of the season. 8 catches, 133 yards, and a score on 9 targets. Dud from Julio Jones. A.J. Brown, if you were able to kind of buy low on him the past couple weeks, looks like it's going to go well. They're getting him more involved deep down the field, and especially on those deep crossers in the middle of the field when Derrick Henry's taking so much attention from the defense. I don't think Julio Jones is droppable, but like, still a low-volume passing offense where A.J. Brown's clearly the one. I just don't feel comfortable starting Julio Jones right now. For the Chiefs, this is a train wreck. I mean, they couldn't get off the field on defense. Their offense couldn't stay on the field. I mean, the plays they ran in this game, and especially in the first half, like they just weren't on the field. I mean, they averaged, they're giving up like 8 yards per play or 7 yards per play. On defense, they're giving up the most points per drive. I believe the most yards per drive. Teams are scoring points on like well over 50% of drives against them. Like, they just cannot get off the field on defense. And that's going to be nice for the pass catcher for the Chiefs. For they're going to have to throw a lot and stuff. But like, I mean, it's just ridiculous right now. Patrick Mahomes, brutal game. Turnovers, again, he has a pick and a fumble in this game, or maybe even 2 fumbles. Took a scary hit late in this game. Looked like he was out of it, but Fortunately, he was okay. Past concussion protocol, he's expected to play on Monday night, but that was definitely scary. It's just been a train wreck season for the Chiefs, who are now 3-4. Tyreek Hill, I mean, you're lucky he even got 6 for 49, because for some reason he and Travis Kelce were in this game after Mahomes suffered the injury. Chad Henne comes in, the game's out of reach with 4 minutes left, and these guys are still in the game. So if you had them on your fantasy team, you're like, okay, they salvaged a bad game, but they should not have been on the field. That was very, very not smart by Andy Reid. But obviously better days are ahead for them. It was just a train wreck day for the Chiefs offense. And Darrell Williams is still the lead back. I mean, they couldn't run the ball in this game, but he still had, you know, 3 catches on 4 targets. Massive bounce back spot for him and the entire Chiefs next week. But yeah, I mean, if you're a Chiefs fan, I'm starting to get to the point now. It's like, where we see teams beat the Chiefs. Is it surprising? Is it? It's not even an upset. Like the Bills and Titans, the last 2 weeks beating the Chiefs are not upsets. The Chiefs are a legitimately bad football team right now. We should not be surprised when they lose to teams like the Titans and the Bills. You know, if they lose to the Giants next week, we should probably be surprised a little bit. But like, they're not a good football team right now. In any way, offense, they still have as much, you know, firepower as any offense in the league. But they're turning the ball over more than anybody. Right? Like the Jets are the only team, I believe, in the NFL this season with more turnovers than the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, that is absurd. That's absolutely absurd. And like I said, they're just a bad football team right now. Let's go to Lambeau. Green Bay wins 24-10 over the Washington football team. 3 more passing touchdowns for Aaron Rodgers on 274 yards. Devontae Adams, 6 for 76 on a score on 7 targets. Robert Tonyan finally has a good game. Still not buying in, but he has 4 for 63 and a touchdown. And Alan Lazard had a really nice drive to end the first half. Finished with 5 for 60 and a touchdown on 6 targets. But I believe Marquez Valdes-Scantling could easily be back next week. So, I mean, for the Packers, there's really not much to say. Aaron Jones was a huge disappointment this game, though. Only had 6 carries. I mean, they did not run the football in this game. And I guess it makes sense going into it, right? The one thing Washington's defense can do this year and has done successfully is stop the run. And the Packers just threw the ball 35 times. And without William Jackson at secondary, you know, Devontae Adams did whatever he wanted to. Even Robert Tonyan and Alan Lazard to an extent. So Aaron Jones has had a lot of spike weeks and then some down weeks. The important thing is, though, he was dominating playing time and usage over A.J. Dillon, who fumbled in this game. So that's good to see. We know Aaron Jones is going to have some huge weeks where he scores a couple touchdowns because he's very good at scoring touchdowns. But this has also been a thing with Aaron Jones, right? In weeks where he doesn't score touchdowns, he's not exactly the highest floor running back in fantasy. But the snaps for the backfield, I mean, Jones played 41, Dillon played 13. So that's good, but only 6 carries for Aaron Jones was definitely frustrating. For Washington, I had to start and stream Heineke in the league, and I was feeling good. I mean, he had 95 rushing yards in this game. He had a passing touchdown, but he should have had a better game. I mean, I hate that new rule. He had an easy walk-in rushing touchdown, kind of started to slip and dove for the end zone to make sure he got in. And of course, the refs say he gave himself up. Like any quarterback or any player in the league, when they're about to walk into the end zone, would just slide down. He obviously was diving for the end zone. He was starting to slip and dove. Should have been a rushing touchdown. Then it gets to 4th-and-1, and he gets stuffed on a quarterback sneak. So Heineke had like 20-plus fantasy points. Should have been like 26 or 27. 95 rushing yards. Fitzpatrick probably not close to coming back, so Heineke's going to be in that streaming, you know, on that streaming radar, especially with Russell Wilson out and other quarterbacks going on bye, Lamar Jackson on bye, Derek Carr on bye. So he'll be on that radar. Another double-digit target game for Terry McLaurin, who's averaging like 11 per game, a 30-plus percent target share in games with Taylor Heineke this season. He has 7 catches for 122 yards and a touchdown. He's amazing. He's awesome. You're starting him every week. The backfield, I mean, another dud from Antonio Gibson, 14 carries, 51 yards. Lost a fumble, but luckily Washington recovered it. There's no way he's 100% still, and the passing game works not there. Again, 2 catches for 5 yards. McKissick has 4 catches for 34 yards on 6 targets. You're probably starting Gibson, but you don't feel great about it. I mean, he was a borderline first round pick this offseason, but he's not going to return that value. And with this defense still, they played better in this game. Definitely. The pass rush got home. Chase Young, Jonathan Allen, Montez Sweat. These guys got home against Aaron Rodgers. So that was definitely encouraging. The problem is if they don't, the back end is still so bad And this is another game where Washington was chasing points. Antonio Gibson not on the field in the two-minute drill and third downs and stuff like that. So McKissick's going to be on that flex radar in PPR leagues because of that. And it's going to hurt Gibson's upside on the opposite end of the spectrum. And then speaking of streamers, Ricky Seals-Jones the last 3 weeks. I mean, prior to this game, he had played 141 of 142 snaps over his last two games going into this game. And then in this game, he plays 72 snaps. He played every snap. Played every offensive snap again for the second straight week for the Washington football team. He ran 47 routes at 7 targets. He's a top 10-ish tight end until Logan Thomas is back. I talked about this on the DFS pod with John Daigle. You can't find 5 tight ends in the NFL right now with better, more consistent, reliable usage than Ricky Seals-Jones. You just can't. So there's that. This game was probably the best game of the week, honestly. Atlanta 30, Miami 28. The Falcons win on a last-second field goal. A lot of good fantasy performances here. We'll start with the Atlanta side. Matt Ryan against a bad Dolphins defense. Even getting Xavier Howard and Byron Jones back, he still had a great game. He was able to throw passes deep down the field, ultimately finishing with 336 yards and a pair of touchdowns. Did have 2 turnovers, but it's still a solid game for Matt Ryan. I want to talk about the backfield, though. I'll take the L. I mean, in the past, I've said Cordarrelle Patterson, sell high, get him off your team, especially when his value is at its highest. You can trade him and get something good for him. But now it's like he's in a great role. I mean, he's in like a DeAndre Swift, Aaron Jones type role where he's getting 12 to 14 carries and 5 to 7 receptions almost every game. The receptions weren't there this week, but he still had 5 targets. And he is I know Mike Davis left late in this game with injury, kind of limped off. I haven't seen an update on that. But even before that, he was dominating the playing time. He really was. Like, this backfield belongs to Cordarrelle Patterson right now. In this game, he outsnaps Mike Davis 46 to 38. He outtouches him, I believe it was, 16 to, 4? He's now had at least 14 touches in each of the last two games. And this is Atlanta, coming out of their bye, and you see Patterson more involved than Mike Davis. That's pretty telling to me. I mean, Mike Davis, he was kind of on that RB3, low-end RB2 flex radar. Like, I wouldn't even start him right now. The snaps were there, right? It was 46 to 38 in favor of Cordarrelle Patterson. The routes were pretty much even. But again, Patterson's getting targets when he's on the field and runs routes. And it was 14 to 4 in carries. And Patterson got the goal line and short yardage work in this game. Patterson's a running back too in PPR leagues going forward. And again, even now going into week 8, we've had a sample size of him being a huge part of this offense. But it's still sounds weird to say. But he fits this offense well, right? Matt Ryan, top 10 or bottom 10 in time to throw it. He's getting the ball out quickly. He's not taking shots in the field unless it's to Kyle Pitts. We'll talk about him in a minute. And Cordarrelle Patterson's that guy getting the short area targets, the quick targets, and he's getting goal line work now. So, yeah, Patterson, a top 15 running back as it stands right now, and I don't see how we can think otherwise. Let's talk about Kyle Pitts, though. Back-to-back awesome games from the all-world tight end. He's now gone over 100 yards in back-to-back games. And the last time we saw him was week 5 in London. Atlanta was on a bye in week 6. That game, there was no Russell Gage and Calvin Ridley. So many people were like, okay, cool. It was against Jacksonville without Ridley and Russell Gage. I'm not 100% buying in. And then Gage and Ridley are back in this game. And Pitts goes for 7 catches, 163 yards on 8 targets. But the overall numbers are great. But I'll tell you what, Kyle Pitts' film from week 7 in this game against Miami Dolphins, I'll put that up against film of any player in the NFL this season. He was that good. I mean, winning in man coverage on the outside, making plays up the seam. He had a one-handed catch down the sideline. He had a contested catch down the sideline. He lined up out wide 14 times in this game, which was over 42% of his snaps. On the season, he's lining up out wide over 31% of the time. That leads all tight ends. He was out wide in single man coverage against all pro corner Xavier Howard and beat him for 28 yards down the sideline. Like Kyle Pitts, tight ends don't do that. Receivers don't really do that. Not many receivers do that. And yet Kyle Pitts, 18.5 average at the target. So they finally went down the field for the Falcons offense, and it was to Kyle Pitts. I mean, he's awesome. He has arrived. Easy top 5 tight end rest of the way, and he's pushing top 3 status. I mean, Waller didn't play last week. He's going on a bye, but he's been a little bit underwhelming. Andrews had been smashing prior to this past week, but I mean, like the usage, how he looks, they're moving him all over the formation. I mean, he's only been in line on 45 snaps this season. That's not surprising, but they're moving him all over the formation. I mean, it was such an impressive performance from Kyle Pitts. I was very, very, very impressed. He is awesome. Calvin Ridley back in the lineup. It wasn't an efficient day. 4 catches for 26 yards, but he does score. He does see double-digit targets again. He's still around that 28% target share on the season. But the problem is he's not being used down the field. I mean, last year, Calvin Ridley was among the league leaders in deep targets and air yards. I believe he led the NFL in air yards, and it's just not the case this year. And it's definitely hurting his upside. I still think at the end of the day, when a player as talented as Calvin Ridley is getting 8 to 12 targets every single game, I have interest in acquiring that player. So, like, again, I'm still trying to buy low on Calvin Ridley, but I will say him being used closer to the line of scrimmage and not down the field is not an encouraging development. And it's not like it's just been this week or the past. It's been all year. So they need to use him down the field more, but he's still getting all the targets, which is nice to see. For Miami, Tua Tagovailoa, a popular streamer, I had to play him in multiple leagues. And per usual, Tua had a couple really ugly, bad interceptions, but the overall stat line, the overall performance was good. 291 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 picks. One touchdown goes to Mike Gesicki, who, again, I'll take the L on. A lot of it has to do with Devontae Parker and Will Fuller missing so much time, but similar to Kyle Pitts, like, he's not playing inline tight end. He's playing slot receiver. No tight end in the NFL has operated out of the slot more often than Mike Gesicki, who has 7 catches for 85 yards and a score on 8 targets in this game. He's been fantastic over the last 4 or 5 weeks. You're starting him every single week. Jaylen Waddle left this game with an injury, did come back, 7 catches for 83 yards on 8 targets. He's getting, when he's played with Tua Tagovailoa, he's getting 8 targets. That's just a lock. And then the other touchdowns go to Isaiah Ford and Matt Collins. You're not worried about them. Malcolm Brown started this game, got the opening carry, but he left this game. Miles Gaskin, he's been probably the most up and down, tough to trust player in fantasy. But maybe that starts to trend the other way. He has 15 carries in this game to Savon Ahmed's 7. He adds 4 catches and a touchdown. So 19 touches for Miles Gaskin in this game. Again, like I said, Malcolm Brown didn't come back in this game, which is extremely notable because he'd been, I mean, like last game, they all 3 running backs played like 20 plus snaps. Brown, they like in the goal line and in the 2-minute drill. So with him out, Miles Gaskin ends up playing 46 snaps to Savon Ahmed's 22. He ran 24 routes to Ahmed's 11. Probably would be more trustworthy as a flex going forward if Malcolm Brown is forced to miss time. Of course, they do go to Buffalo next week, which is a brutal matchup. But he would still be, he would be somebody you feel a lot more comfortable starting. But it's still like, he could easily go back to having 8 touches in this game for 32 yards and no touchdown. And then you're like, what the hell? So again, Miami goes to Buffalo next week. Tough spot for Tua and these guys to keep producing like they did the past couple weeks in terms of fantasy. But if you start them this week, you're very happy with the performance. Moving on to the 4 o'clock games, Detroit, they give them credit. I mean, the Detroit Lions really have played tough every single game this season. They played with a lead for the first time this season, and they surprised the Rams with an onside kick, 2 fake punts, all of which they converted. But they do ultimately fall short against the Rams 28-19. I don't have words for Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford anymore. Cooper Kupp, 10 catches, 156 yards, and 2 touchdowns on 13 targets. Stafford, 334 and 3. I mean, breakfast rules. Breakfast above all. When you have a breakfast buddy, you just throw him the ball 13 times a game. I mean, Cooper Kupp, you're not trading Cooper Kupp. Like, I don't care if somebody offers you the world. Like, why would you trade this guy right now or ever? He's unbelievable. I don't have anything to say. Darrell Henderson, probably one of the most disappointing players of the week in a smash spot. And again, a lot of that has to do with giving the Lions credit, right? The game didn't get out of hand. They stuffed the run in this game. Henderson only had 45 yards on 15 carries, 3 catches for 19 yards. Obviously better days are ahead. And the thing I care about most is the playing time, where he's just been, when he's been healthy, it's been all Daryl Henderson over Sony Michel. And in this game, it continued. Henderson, 57 snaps to Sony Michel's 8, 30 routes to Michel's 3, and 15 carries to Michel's 2. And Michel came in for like a drive and a half. Henderson took like a big shot, but he was fine, was on the sideline with his helmet on, probably just gave him a breather. Like that usage, 57 snaps to 8. Henderson gets, the Texans next week? Yeah, he will bounce back. You're starting him every week. That usage is awesome from Daryl Henderson, but it's disappointing. But again, when Cooper Kupp's getting all the touchdowns, takes away from Henderson. Robert Woods, 6 for 70 on 6 targets. Much better. He did help with a 2-point conversion, but he's in that wide receiver 3 range. It's just so clearly Cooper Kupp's show right now. For Detroit, DeAndre Swift had a 63-yard screen pass he took to the house in the opening drive. So that was awesome. He has 8 catches for 96 yards. Pretty much leading this team in reception, or leading all running backs in receptions and routes and targets. Again, like, he's getting the high value touches. He's playing more than Jamal Williams prior to this game. Williams ran well in this game, and the snaps were a little bit closer than they had been prior to this game. But DeAndre Swift is awesome. Hawkinson, 6 for 48 on 9 targets. He's been underwhelming. And maybe Khalif Raymond needs to be added in deeper league. 6 catches for 115 yards on 8 targets. And he's getting looks more consistently as they're throwing to the receivers a little bit more. But this offense is still clearly running through the running backs and TJ Hawkinson right now. Vegas, 33, the Eagles, 22. Darren Waller did not play in this game. I debated streaming O.J. Howard or Foster Moreau. Luckily, I stuck with Foster Moreau, who caught all 6 of his targets for 60 yards and an impressive touchdown on National Tight Ends Day. Look, the Raiders love Foster Moreau. They really do. It's just when Darren Waller breaks out and becomes one of the best tight ends in the NFL, obviously he's going to play. But Moreau is going to be in that top 15 to 12 range if Waller misses any time. He's a really talented player. He scores a ton of touchdowns with his frame in the red zone. He's athletic. He's got size. They love him. And Derek Carr loves him too. So that's a really, really nice game. Hunter Renfrow continues to provide a really strong PPR floor. He goes 7 for 58 on 8 targets. Josh Jacobs, 6 carries, 29 yards. He left this game with a chest injury. He scored a touchdown, by the way. Left this game with a chest injury, didn't return, but the Raiders believe it's not serious. So again, the Raiders go on bye in week number 8, giving Jacobs time to heal and rest up. But now, second week in a row where Kenny Drake's been more involved, 14 carries, 69 yards, and a score, adds 3 catches for 10 yards. Coming out of the bye, if Jacobs is forced to miss time, Drake's in that RB2 range because Peyton Barber's not active, and Jalen Richard was a little bit involved in this game, but that's only because Josh Jacobs missed time. So keep an eye on that coming out of the bye. Keep an eye on Jacobs and Darren Waller with their status for the Raiders. And Derek Carr, by the way, 90% completion rate, 323 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Raiders are in first place in the AFC West. Derek Carr is playing some really good football right now. For the Eagles, Jalen Hurts does it again. Not much in the first half or the first three quarters. Then he ultimately finishes with 2 touchdowns, 236 passing yards, and 61 rushing yards. Another 20-point fantasy performance from Jalen Hurts. You'd like the production to be better and more consistent, and you'd like to be able to watch the first three quarters of the game, but he gets there every week, so that's all that matters. Miles Sanders, though, this was very frustrating and upsetting because Sanders had not been utilized much at all during the season. And then during the week, head coach Nick Sirianni, offensive coordinator Shane Steichen, talk about how they have to get Miles Sanders the ball. They have to get him going. And that was clearly the case. He had 5 carries in the opening drive in this game. He had, 7 touches on his first 12 snaps of the game, and then suffers an ankle injury, gets carted off the field, and does not return. Super frustrating. I believe the report was that he didn't break any bones. But the Eagles aren't sure about his timetable. It sounds like he's going to miss some time. And, you look at it. Okay, you think maybe Kenneth Gainwell should be rostered 100%, right? But Boston Scott, Kenneth Gainwell was not getting carries. Miles Sanders wasn't even getting carries when he was healthy. The Eagles were so quick to abandon the run. So if Miles Sanders misses time, why wouldn't they just, especially because Gainwell is a pass-catching running back, the Eagles are going to go pass heavy if Miles Sanders misses time. And yes, Gainwell will play more snaps and he'll be a viable PPR flex. That was his role in this game, right? Boston Scott came in, and when he got acclimated, he was the early downs back and got the goal line work. He had three carries from inside the 10-yard line in this game. I will say, though, that those three carries came when the Eagles were in hurry-up mode, kind of frantically trying to get back in the game, playing quickly, and he was just happy to be on the field. We know Gainwell has been the two-minute running back when Miles Sanders has been healthy, but I don't think it's a situation where Kenneth Gainwell becomes the every-down running back. He's going to get plenty of targets and be viable PPR flex, like I said, but he's not going to see 15 touches a game, I don't think. The Eagles are going to abandon the run like they have been. Boston Scott should probably be picked up. They do face the Lions next week, so I would like to say the Eagles will be playing with a lead, but I don't know if they will, man. The Lions are playing tough. The Eagles are bad. The Lions are at home. So I would look at Boston Scott and obviously make sure Gainwell's not out there in leagues, but like, don't expect Kenneth Gainwell to all of a sudden be a 15 to 17 touch running back for this Eagles offense. Again, if they do abandon the run, that will favor Gainwell because he's going to play on third downs and 2-minute drills. But and when they get behind, but don't just think he's the clear workhorse because the Eagles didn't have a workhorse all year. So why would they now? But it's definitely frustrating because I think Miles Sanders was in line for a nice game and B, a nice second half of the season. And the Eagles weren't lying. They were clearly going to get him more involved in this game. Eagles first game without without Zach Ertz. Dallas Goedert has 5 targets, 3 catches for 70 yards, adds a 2-point conversion. Devonta Smith, 5 catches for 61 yards on 9 targets. They're both, you know, startable options. Goddard probably starting every week. Smith's in that low end wide receiver 3 range, but you don't feel great about it. Arizona 31, Houston 5. Really not much from this game. Kyler's awesome. 3 touchdowns, 261 yards. 1 goes to Hopkins, 1 goes to Christian Kirk, and 1 goes to Zach Ertz. I mean, if you're giving up a 47-yard catch and run to Zach Ertz, you're probably bad against tight ends, and you're probably just bad in general. That's now five straight games the Texans have allowed a tight end to score, and they're not even facing great tight ends, right? It's Ertz, Dawson Knox, Tommy Tremble, Mo Alie-Cox. Like, they're just so bad against the position. So Tyler Higbee, I'll be playing a lot next week. Chase Edmonds, 15 carries for 81 yards, but he's not involved in the passing game. And I was surprised that Edmonds got all the carries he did in the fourth quarter. Usually that would be James Conner. So, like, he really saved you by getting a couple, like, 12, 10-yard runs late in the game. Conner, 10 carries, 64 yards, and a touchdown. I thought he'd have more carries in this game, given the game script. He'd been averaging, like, 16-plus carries per game in the games Arizona's won by multiple touchdowns prior to this game, but he only gets 10 here. Definitely disappointing, but you'll take the 64 yards and a score if you flex them or whatever. And it's now Hopkins with 9 targets. Still hasn't reached double digits. Still not getting a ton of yardage, but he keeps scoring touchdowns. I mean, I think at 7 already from the season, so definitely good. You're not sitting him or anything, but he's still not. I still don't think he has a ceiling that he had last year, obviously, because Kyler Murray keeps spreading the ball around. I mean, AJ Green didn't have 6 targets again, but he had 3, and him and Kirk are getting the downfield stuff. Rondale Moore and Edmonds are getting targets. Ertz got 5 targets, so this is good for Kyler Murray because he has so many different options to throw the football to, but there's going to be some inconsistencies with the passing game. I don't have anything on the Texans. I mean, Brandon Cook still has 7 of the 31 targets. Maybe Tyrod Taylor's back soon, but this offense, this team, they suck. They're really bad. They're really, really bad. And another blowout, Tampa Bay 38, Chicago 3. Again, like, I don't have much here. Antonio Brown and Gronk were out in this game. Mike Evans really did see a lot of Jalen Johnson this game. It just didn't matter. I mean, he was awesome this game. 6 catches on 10 targets for 76 yards and 3 scores. And Chris Godwin finally bounces back. 8 catches for 111 yards and a score on 11 targets. They combined for 21 of the team's 39 targets. Again, not too surprising given the fact that no Gronk and no Antonio Brown. If you're worried about Ronald Jones getting 10 carries to Leonard Fournette's 15, don't. When the game was close for the first, like, you know, 2 minutes of this game, it was all Fournette, who, again, has now scored 4 touchdowns over his last 5 games or something like that. 15 carries, 81 yards and a score. I mean, he's an RB1. I mean, I said it 2 weeks ago, I'll say it again. Like, he is an RB1. Ronald Jones' usage doesn't scare me. The game was out of reach by halftime. Even before halftime, this game was over. I mean, Tony Romo and Jim Nantz were, like, making jokes about, you know, they're back in this game. They're not. But with the Bears, Khalil Herbert ran for 100 yards against the Buccaneers. That's just something that doesn't happen. Dalvin Cook did it last year. He's the only one that did it. Like, you just don't run against the Buccaneers. But Khalil Herbert, like, he's legit. Damian Williams is droppable. Herbert, 18 carries to Williams, 3. And again, maybe it's conditioning with Williams, who was on the COVID list. But, I mean, Montgomery probably won't be back till, like, I think they have a week 10 bye. So, like, maybe week 11. So, Khalil Herbert, I mean, the Bears obviously got behind in this game. But they won. I mean, they ran the ball. He got 18 carries in the game. They were down, you know, 21-3 right out of the gate. So the Bears clearly just want to run the football. They're top five in rushing rate, well over 50%. So Khalil Herbert definitely needs to be added in every single league. He's the running back right now to roster and to play in Chicago. And again, Montgomery going to miss the next handful of weeks still. Allen Robinson, 2-for-16 on 4 targets. Like, again, like, the offensive line is one of the worst in the league. Fields is struggling. Robinson just looks like he doesn't even care out there, which I don't even blame him. He didn't want to be there in the first place, and now things are just spiraling downwards for Robinson and the Bears. Just bad. Like, Robinson's kind of been droppable, especially in 10-team leagues. It seems weird to drop him in a 12-team league, but, like, if you need to pick somebody up, and maybe, like, if you didn't drop him this week, you're probably not dropping him going into this week because you don't have 6 teams on bye. You don't have to make as many tough decisions in terms of your roster, but you're obviously not starting on Robinson. Maybe the rest of the year. It's just a lost season. It really is. We'll close it out with the Sunday night game. Indianapolis 30 to the San Francisco 49ers 18. Elijah Mitchell had a monster first drive and first quarter of this game. He had like 80 yards and a touchdown in the opening quarter. Finished with 18 carries for 107 yards and a score. Trey Sermon didn't even play a snap in this game. Jamichael Hasty played on like every third down, which isn't great for Mitchell, but this is a run first team. He got 18 carries in this game. He looked great, really showed great patience and vision. So again, if you spent that fab on Elijah Mitchell way back, probably looks okay right now because you have the RB1 and a run heavy team that really doesn't have a lot of going for them. I mean, it's Elijah Mitchell and it's Deebo Samuel right now. Deebo Samuel has 7 catches for 100 yards on 11 targets. He now has at least 26% of the team targets in every game this season. He has 34% of San Francisco's targets on the year, 32% of the receptions, and 44% of the receiving yards. That's Devontae Adams-type usage and involvement in offense. They clearly don't and can't trust Brandon Ayuk. George Kittle's out. No other receivers on this team, you know, Mohamed Sanu, Trent Sherfield, they don't warrant targets. I mean, Debo's a locked-in top 12 receiver the rest of the way pretty easily. And even with the quarterback situation in flux right now for San Francisco, it doesn't matter. Debo's making plays down the field more than he ever has, and we know when they get him the ball on screens and jet sweeps and touch passes, he's elite after the catch. So Debo's turning out to be one of the best values in fantasy football during draft season. For the Colts, another awesome game for Jonathan Taylor. Got off to a scary start. He fumbled his first carry of the game, but they didn't get away from him. He played 70% of the snaps. He's now seen his snap share increase in every game since week 3, and he had 21 touches in this game, his first game with at least 20 touches since week 1. 110 total yards and a touchdown. He's now had 3 100-yard games over his last 4. During that span, he scored 6 touchdowns. He's making big plays, ripping off long runs, still among the league leaders in carries inside the 5. He's awesome. The schedule is still really good going forward. He's got Tennessee next week. I believe he has Jacksonville after that, like, superstar. And I tweeted out in the offseason that Jonathan Taylor shouldn't be a first-round pick in fantasy. That's probably going to make me look stupid. And again, McCaffrey missing time and Barkley missing time and stuff like that definitely has a lot to do with it. But, and again, it wasn't anything about Taylor as a talent. It's just I thought there was a lot of good players in the first round. But Taylor's awesome. And we saw less Marlon Mack in this game finally. Maybe he gets traded before the deadline, but Taylor's awesome, and the usage we've seen now, again, snap share increasing every week since week 3, that is awesome. That's what I love to see. Michael Pittman continues to make a wow play every week. I feel like he leads the NFL in players mossed. He just mosses somebody every week. He did it twice in this game. 4 catches, 105 yards, and a score on 4 targets. Obviously, both teams didn't throw the ball much in this game with the crazy weather. But Wentz is not afraid to take shots. He's getting bailed out by a lot of pass interference calls, but like that's giving Michael Pittman one-on-one contested catch opportunities where he's been more often than not very good this year. T.Y. Hilton didn't play, dealing with a quad right now. Pittman's awesome. Like, Pittman looks the part. He looks really good. And then Mo Alie-Cox scores again. He's in that, like, top 15 tight end streamer range. Again, we have two elite tight ends on bye. So Mo Alie-Cox against Tennessee's bad pass defense, probably going to be on that radar. And we'll see a lot of teams probably stream him in week number 8. That'll do it for week 7 recap. We have one more game in week 7, Monday Night Football between the Saints and Seattle Seahawks. We have Geno Smith against Jameis Winston. Should be an interesting game. Probably going to see a lot of Alvin Kamara in this game, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully week number 7 was good for you. I'm sweating some Tyler Lockett on Monday night, so I'm hoping things go my way. And of course, Fade the Chalk will be back on Tuesday. Debro and I going through waivers for week 8, already about to be in week 8. It's crazy. Appreciate everybody listening. As always, best of luck on Monday Night Football. Check out FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, and FTN Bets. And if you would be so kind, leave a rating or a review. Subscribe to Fade the Chalk on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Help us out, and we continue to make these episodes for you 5 times, 6 times, maybe even a week here on Fade the Chalk. Hopefully everybody had a great week 7. Thanks for listening as always. Happy Monday. We'll see you guys on Tuesday. Peace out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.